Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the August 18th, 2015 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. A couple of housekeeping details. Please silence your cell phones and other electronic devices. If there were to be a fire, we have emergency exits to my right at the back of the room and to my left at the front of the room. Please don't use the elevator and if there were a fire. I wonder if folks would please stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call, members, please?
Mr. Burbank? Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera has asked to be excused. Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present.
We have quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We will be having an executive session tonight to discuss labor negotiations. Let's move to privilege of the floor for the public. We have one blue card tonight. Thank you. If anybody else wants to speak, please send up a blue card. We have some rules. So we have a screen to the side that counts down the 3 minutes which are allocated for a person to speak. A person who speaks is agreeing to the 3 minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. You agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. We have one so far, Carrie Blake, here.
Hi, I'm Carrie Blakenshire, obviously, City of Ithaca resident for about the next week. So I just wanted to come up here and say bye. You guys have been great fun to cover. Typically, I cover school, village, town, and planning boards in four different towns, plus you guys. And out of those, like, gajillion meetings that I go to, I think you guys have been the most interesting. Yeah, you should see what they do at Spencer Planning Board. And part of that's because there's just more of you, so there's, you know, more personalities in the mix. And part of that's because you have an impressive ability to sustain argument. I don't know if you remember, but you argued for, like, an hour once over whether to use the word possibly or probably in the e-cigarette resolution. And that was after you'd already argued about the same thing in committee. You know, and from a reporter's perspective, that's great, because if you all agree, I have nothing to write about, you know. I sort of liken going to meetings to going to hockey games. You're really only there for the fight. You guys haven't, you know, quite been on the level of an NHL tournament. You have been great fun to cover, and people like Joe and Marcia have gone out of their way to make my job easy. I know I totally violated in just talking about county personnel, but they are great. And, so I'm going to miss you guys. Thanks for everything. Bye.
Thank you, Kate.
Carrie, thanks for covering us and for the Ithaca Times efforts to let people know about the county. A lot of times our residents don't really know what we do, and you've paid attention to detail. That makes a difference. That's the only ones I have. We have municipal officials. I see the current town supervisor of the town of Ithaca, Herb Engman. Herb, please step to the microphone. We'd love to hear about the town.
Well, thank you, and thank you, Mike, for reminding us. It had been a while since we'd gotten somebody over here to give you an update, and I'm very happy to do so. I use the old-fashioned way of limiting my time by only using a tiny little card so I can only get so many items on it. So,
well, we don't normally hold the municipal officials to the 3 minutes.
That's the way I do it.
If you want to do that, that's fine.
The first thing I wanted to mention was an intermunicipal effort that we're all involved with, and I just wanted to laud the role of the county, and that is the Tompkins County Council of Governments. TCOG has been an absolutely wonderful organization. I had participated in a couple of others prior to the creation of TCOG, and they just didn't work, and this one does. And the genius who created it, in my estimation, was Don Barber, the town supervisor of the town of Caroline. But what has maintained it over time, it seems to me, is the support from the county. Joe Mariani has been absolutely wonderful. And he's allowed Michelle Porteroff to be our support, and she has kept us on track and informed, and it's been absolutely wonderful, and I think people don't recognize enough the success of TCOG and the role that the county has had in it. So thank you very much. Specifically for some town issues, since I've been here last, I think we've created an economic development committee in the town. We've developed a rather poor reputation for being friendly to business and to economic enterprises in the town. And one of the things we are trying to do is to learn more about economic development and to network with those who do know something about it, and to try to create a better atmosphere for business, farming, the industries in the town of Ithaca. Rod Howe is the chair of that group, and so we're hoping to make some progress on that front. I wanted to mention also that the town is doing a study of Route 96B from the city line to King Road. And the reason is that there have been some serious accidents on that stretch of road for pedestrians, and indeed a police officer was hit while investigating one of those accidents. And so we're trying to figure out a way to produce better pedestrian and cyclist access up the road, not just to Ithaca College, but all the way to the intersection with King Road. That report should be done by the consultant in the fall, and then it'll become available, and then we'll all have to talk and see what we can do to improve things up that road. And there are other roads to be done, but this one is the one we're starting with and hoping to make some progress. I also wanted to mention that we are still very excited about the Pine Tree Road Trail, which is on schedule for next year, I understand. Cornell is now moving a bit on their consultant to plan the first phase of the redevelopment of the East Hill Plaza area, and especially if they get more residents up there, we're really going to need a safe way for them to get down Pine Tree Road and onto campus. And the off-road pedestrian way, which is a joint project of the county, Cornell, and the town, will be just absolutely essential, and the town thinks it's important enough that we have agreed that we will maintain the trail once constructed. So that's a very important connection for us, I think, in the town. I also wanted to just compliment the county on Henshaw Road. Beautiful, beautiful job. The town, Cornell, and the county collaborated on the sidewalk, which is parallel to it. I go up there all the time and constantly see people using it. It's just a wonderful accomplishment, and I think the county should be very proud of the role it played in getting that redone. Finally, I wanted to mention that I will be retiring at the end of this year. After 4 years on the town board, 8 years as town supervisor, I figure it's time for somebody else to have a chance. I also want to try some new things in life. And I did want to mention, though, that Bill Goodman, who is the deputy town supervisor, is a candidate for town supervisor. And assuming he wins, I think there will be a very smooth transition, since we have essentially been job sharing for the past 2 years. So he has learned a lot about what is involved with being a town supervisor and all of the issues surrounding the town. So as we move forward, I think we're going to transition very smoothly to next year to a new administration and continue looking forward to working with the county. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Herb. Would anyone like to ask any questions of Herb about the town? Martha Robertson.
Not a question. I just want to thank you for your years of service. And on Pine Tree, it really has meant a lot. It certainly helped us to leverage Cornell's significant contribution by saying the town is backing it, and you increased your share mm-hmm. when the budget went up. So that, among many other things, Herb, we really appreciate your
Thank you.
Collaboration and your support.
Thank you. Thanks very much for coming, Herb. It means a lot to us to have you respond to our letter, and hope other towns and villages in the city take advantage as well. Chair's report's pretty short tonight. I don't have a... Oh, we got to go back to legislators' privilege of the floor. I was already skipping down to my report. Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Mike. I want to respond to Kerry Blakinger coming to the microphone. During my time in local government here in Ithaca, I spent 13 years in city government, and I've been here 9, and I've seen a lot of young reporters, and Marcia will be, I think, attest to this, come through city council meetings, ICB, WTKO, HCU, BBR, BBR especially, and leave it and get to the what I call the big time. It may be the wrong word, but, you know, I think if you think about some of the people who've been here and gone away, and become really influential people in the journalism world, that's pretty amazing. For those, everyone here knows Carrie's story. She was a Cornell student. She was reporting the news as an editor of the Cornell Daily Sun, and then there was a time when she was making the news after that. But now she's back reporting the news again and doing a really great job of it. I think I've known that she writes for Salon.com, which is, you know, in my realm, not often, and many other websites around the country, talking about issues that we're dealing with here, talking about issues that she's learned about, prison issues, ban the box now, other kinds of things. So it isn't often that reporters come in here and we talk about their articles. And that happened yesterday. As a career path, I don't know a whole lot about career paths, because mine was, you know, I became a teacher and then went to local government. And, you know, some people said it stalled at local government, which is fine. But as a career path, I don't know that I would choose her path or recommend it, but she's done remarkably well with being able to get where she's going to the New York Daily News. So.
Thank you, Jim. Martha?
I want to echo that. I know that as government, we're supposed to have an adversarial relationship, I suppose, with journalism. That would characterize some of our relationships, but it really has been a pleasure to have somebody who understood things the first time we explained them and reported accurately and fairly but on a personal level, Carrie, your courage is really an inspiration to all of us, that, you know, you are who you are, and you've not just taken your personal struggles and just kind of, you know, overcome them, but but use that as a springboard to create justice, to fight for justice for other people, and it really is an inspiration. Do not be a stranger. You come on back. It ain't far. So I love your Facebook post, and I know when you announced that you were leaving, and this will always be home where you can find friends. So thank you for everything. To switch topics, there is a news item that's exciting, but also is a reflection of a very important event in history today. Today, I guess it was announced that two women have passed the rigorous, the unbelievable challenges of passing the requirements to be an Army Ranger. And they will graduate with their Ranger class on Friday. Two women out of 19 who started. This is the first time that, and now really putting to the country raising the question, can't women as individuals be allowed to compete for whatever the roles are that that they aspire to in the military, as in the rest of life. So congratulations to those two women who haven't been named yet. I suppose on Friday we'll find out their names. But it is interesting that today, 95 years ago, on this date, the 19th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified. A very simple clause that says, the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. So it was passed by Congress in June of 1919 after about 67 years of struggle, ratified this day in 1920 by the state of Tennessee, which put it over the three-quarters mark. So in New York State, it was ratified in 1917 when it passed a referendum, which meant that the men who voted, because only men could vote, an overwhelming majority of New York men voted to allow women to also have the right to vote in 1917. So only 95 years ago, sisters, it's like, that's ridiculous. But it is something to celebrate and also to use as another springboard to keep fighting.
Anyone else like to speak? Carol Chalk.
Hi, thank you, Mike. I do a lot of reading on various topics, and as part of that, I happen to come across a note related to participatory democracy that I'm not going to talk for a long time about, and if anybody's interested in where I found this and why and how and more about what I was reading, you can ask me. But it talked about a poster that was popular in the student uprising in France in 1968, which was an uprising that came at that point somewhat out of the blue. It touched off a whole new era of student uprisings around the world, and certainly in our own country, and was an influence on the world. But the poster that I found so interesting, it said, how do you conjugate the verb to participate? Anybody who's taken a foreign language, most of us who took English, never learned to all do all that conjugation. But foreign languages, they made us conjugate, I do this, you do that, they do that, we all do this. And how do you do that? How do you conjugate the verb to participate? I participate, you participate, we participate, they decide. So anyway, I will not make further comment on that, but it did get me thinking about the ways in which we on all levels in government in the United States, the extent to which we do or don't carry out the views of the founders of our country at a point when there were only 4 million people in our country, that made it easier for participatory democracy to be carried out. Maybe in that vein also, just tonight, in my box is yet another notice from FERC, from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. It's about the New Market project. This is the Dominion very large-scale pipeline that runs interstate across a bunch of the Northeast and ultimately goes to places along the coast that are suitable for export. Reporting on the fact that they got many, many, you know, over 1,000 comments, with the primary issues raised by the commenters relating to the National Environmental Policy Act process, air quality and human health impacts, safety, alternatives, cumulative impacts, noise, purpose, need, and other factors. And it isn't clear to me from this notice exactly what the process is going to be from here on out. There's going to be an issuance of the environmental assessment in October and a 90-day federal authorization decision deadline January 18th, 2016. And I'll just refresh your memories that this is not this project is not one of the local pipeline projects that we've sort of decided not to talk too much about here at the legislature. This is not designed just to, you know, are we going to give access to gas to those who are already here or building minor increases? This is taking a 50 to 60-year-old pipeline that runs from one end of our county to the other. Starts down in Newfield, Enfield area and runs across through the town of Ithaca and across and out towards Cortland County. I haven't been able to find the exact route, but it's 50 to 60 years old and it has welds along the way that are that old, and they are going to triple the volume and pressure of the gas going through this without much more review of that. And many people along the route here and in other states have been concerned. The American Medical Association, in relation to both this and other pipelines in other places across the country, has passed a resolution. The National Committee at the convention of the American Medical Association, they passed a resolution asking for review of pipeline impacts, these kind of large-scale pipeline impacts, at all levels of government. The New York State, it's called the Medical Society of the State of New York, MSSNY, passed its own resolution, even stronger, more strongly referring to the AMA resolution, and both cited what New York State did and the thorough study that New York State made of health assessment related to hydrofracking as a model of what they'd like to see about pipelines. So I participate, you participate, hopefully we can participate on that one. Whether we'll be heard, I don't know. And then I just wanted to add my own thanks to Kerry, in addition to what everybody else has said. We'll miss you a lot. Few people are able to take the length and detail of our meetings and make it as interesting to read about the next day as you've been able to. So I just have greatly appreciated that, and also the way that you've done that in such a professional manner, being able to stay professional and focused on the reports and making it clear when you're doing that and when you're weighing in. It's not an easy thing to do. And if there's any I can't imagine a better case for banning the box than Carrie's life, and if it can help just a few more Carries for us to consider that, I hope that we'll do so in the future. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. I'm going to make a very brief report and just mention the Civil War Commission. We basically run out the commission, our time that was in the original authorizing statement from the chair back then said we were to end in April, but we've still been kicking along a little bit. And on Saturday at Southside, there was a celebration, a very nice celebration, and they combined the Southside celebration with Juneteenth, which had been, for various reasons of scheduling, had to be put over. And at the very beginning, before all the wonderful music and things got going, one of our commissioners, Erica Cree, who is the librarian at the Africana Center at Cornell, spoke for about 10 minutes and talked about the meaning of Juneteenth. He talked about the United States colored troops that were raised for enlistment in Tompkins County, read their names. He talked about the fact that they chose to fight during the Civil War. He talked about how black lives mattered then, as they do now. And it was inspirational, and it was certainly a nice touch to have our Civil War Commission to be a part of that celebration. He also asked people to please go over and spend a little time at the memorial at St. James AME Zion Church, which was just a few steps away. That's on Cleveland Avenue off of Plain Street. If anyone has never been to see that memorial, it's inspirational. It has been there for several years, and it lists those USCT colored troops from Tompkins County. So I wanted to mention that. Before we go to the reports by our county administrator, can we dispose of a couple of things for people in the audience? I see Mike Stamm sort of alone over there. I assume, Mike, that you're here for Resolution G, the bonding resolution. Martha, would you be able to move that so that we can dispose of that?
Sure. I was thinking that because Michael was there, the public, all the public said, oh, boy, we don't want to be there, too. I only say that with love, Michael. Resolution G. Document 5745, resolution of the Tompkins County Legislature as the elected legislative body of Tompkins County, New York, in accordance with Section 147F of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986, as amended the code, approving the issuance by the Tompkins County Development Corporation of up to $50 million aggregate principal amount tax-exempt revenue bonds, Ithaca College Project, Series 2015. I so move.
Is there a second, please? Seconded by Will. Discussion on this.
This Martha? Is a refinancing of a bond, several bonds from through Ithaca College for a number of projects over the years.
Are we all right with this, Carol?
Yeah, I have a question, maybe for Mike.
Mike,
or somebody
please?
Else, if they can answer it. Mike, I'll differ with Martha. I think if the public had known you were going to be here, Mike, they probably would have come out.
I'm sure.
If you don't listen. So I support doing this. You know, it's obviously a good thing for our IDA and TCAD if we do these bonds through them, so I thank Ithaca College for the opportunity. I am curious, with the new opportunities that we have provided to upgrade older buildings with energy efficiency, and the fact that all of this is being refinanced, was the question ever asked, or do we know anything about the energy efficiency of these buildings and whether an additional amount might have been able to help either using the Energize New York, did I get the name of that right, program, or other programs that have become available since these projects were originally financed to improve their energy use while we're taking the trouble to refinance?
That wasn't discussed. This is, as Martha Robertson mentioned, this is purely refinancing some old debt for older projects at the college. We certainly know that Ithaca College has been pretty aggressive and progressive with some of the other projects that we have financed with, I think, receiving LEED's Platinum certification for both their business school that we financed and their administrative building that we financed. But with respect to the dozens and dozens of projects that are bundled into these financing, I really couldn't address that.
Okay. Well, if it's something that we could ask about in the future,
sure,
that would be great. I know SUNY Cortland was able to take an older building and find ways to improve energy efficiency. I assume that this refinance helps them with the payments, and maybe some fraction of the net differential might have been able to be used to improve energy efficiency while they were at it, and maybe there's such opportunities in the future. So, but in the meantime, I do support doing this at this point, and I hope we can just become more conscious.
Jim Denham.
Thank you. Carol, you seem to be confused. This is a refinance. There's no new no new construction here. It's a refinance of buildings that have been in the ground for a good period of time. The agency, in ultimate wisdom, would not ask a question about energy because we're not building anything new here. It's a refi, and that's all there is to it.
Go ahead, Carol.
Yeah, well, since I was characterized as confused, I just want to make it clear. I am not. I don't think I'm at all confused on this. My comment has to do with the new opportunities that have come up since those buildings were built to go back. And the natural point at which one might consider having the money to institute energy upgrades to older buildings is exactly when you're freeing up cash. So I don't. It's not a result of being confused. It's just I think that boy, scientists are saying for the first time we've passed 400 parts per million for the first month of carbon in the atmosphere, and it's something we all need to be conscious of, and that this legislature has taken an active role in helping to provide opportunities. And I just hope that we just it's a job to keep spreading the word and to keep making sure that those out there who have older buildings, especially so many square feet of older buildings, know that there are opportunities. So I'm just hoping that we can just always be conscious of that, and it's not any negative implications on anybody who's been involved in this project.
Jim?
I need to apologize to the rest of the legislature for opening my mouth. I would like to call the question on this.
Well, let's just see. Does anyone else want to speak? Jim, you have the right to call the question. Is there a second for calling the question?
I've had my hand up.
Well, I know, but I thought he was responding back. Does anyone want to second that? All right, let's move on. Dooley?
Thank you. First of all, it was actually fun to read this bond resolution, Mike. The alphabetical list of buildings that are up on that campus are pretty astounding, the way it's grown. And I was glad to hear you describe it as refinancing, because the language in the resolution uses the word refunding, which may be the technically correct word, but it sure is misleading when you read it. And I wondered if we have any choice in that matter. Jonathan?
I'm not the IDA bond counsel, nor is our bond counsel the IDA bond counsel. But I I strongly advise against changing these things which come from bond counsel, because I'm no expert on bonds.
It's a strange use of the word refunding.
I think it relates to IRS regulations, and that according to the IRS, this is a refunding, not a refinancing.
Are you ready to vote?
No, I actually had a couple of questions. There was attached more information than I dreamed I would see with a resolution like this. And it, one of the things attached on packet page 21 is part of your form that goes with this, a request for incentives, although that's not what this is. On page 21, it talks about Ithaca College being a preferred employer and good benefits and so forth. And then on a little further on, it actually, on pages 22 and 23 of our packet, it lists current permanent full-time jobs by occupation and other. And what's singularly not mentioned is the number of adjuncts that are employed there who don't get good wages. And I'm more concerned, I guess, about the form itself, which is more my question to you, Mike, than anything else, since it only seems to talk about full-time jobs. Is that something that could be addressed by your guys?
It certainly could, and I think as those members of the IDA, or in this case TCDC, could attest to, we're always refining and revising our form at the request of stakeholders to provide better and more accurate, more useful information.
Thank you. That would be good in my view. I don't want to delay this vote. I will support this because I know the college faces huge balloon payments if they don't get refinanced, so I'm ready to vote.
Okay. Can we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yep.
Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you for coming, Mike.
Thank you, everyone.
I think if we drop down and do the consent agenda, we can help some of the folks that are waiting. I don't think I have any appointments on the consent agenda tonight. So we have, out of Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution A, Budget Adjustment for the Office for the Aging to Accept Grant for Medicare Improvements for Patients and Providers Act, Agents, Aging and Disability Resource Center, funding for 2015. That's Resolution 5769. B is authorizing Social Services to accept a state grant and enter into contract for non-custodial parent employment program, Resolution 5754. Budget adjustment, this is C, budget adjustment for the 2015 Tompkins County Office for the Aging Health Insurance Information Counseling and Assistance Programs Senior Medicare Patrol. That's ID 5748. D is budget adjustment 2015 State Allocations Youth Services Department, ID 5723. Out of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution E, you want off? Resolution F, authorization.
Off.
Resolution F, okay. So with those two off, can I get a motion on the consent agenda? Been moved by Martha. Is there a second? Seconded by Dooley. All in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Okay. That's the consent agenda. Now, who else have we got? I guess we've got some budget resolutions folks are waiting for. Let's go. Barbara? Barbara's here.
That's E.
Okay. We'll do them in order. Let's do Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Dave McKenna, can you move E for us, please?
Certainly. Okay, it's the award of bid for tipping shelter at Recycling and Solid Waste Center, ID 5767, and I so move.
Who pulled that? I've been seconded by Glenn. Who pulled it? Dooley? Martha? You want to speak?
I just didn't know what was budgeted. This was, so there was only one bid, and for $60,000 and change. I just didn't know, was that amount near or over or under?
The engineer's estimate was very close. It was $60,000.
Is that microphone on now?
The engineer's estimate was $60,000. This came in at $62,000.
Oh, 62? 6439. Okay, great. All right, thank you. Yep. That's all.
Anyone else on that one? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Dave, could you move up?
Okay, authorization to enter into agreement to procure electricity, ID 5744, and also move that.
Who pulled that one? It's also seconded by Glenn. Who pulled that one?
I did.
Dooley, go ahead.
I had tried to send an email to Dave so that he would have it before the committee met, but I guess it didn't get there in time, so I'm raising my question tonight. It strikes me as I read this that we're doing this a year too soon. If you look at lines 23-4 and that whereas and the one after that, we usually act in 2012. We authorized the purchase for 2 years ending in 2014. In 2014, we authorized a purchase for 2 years ending in 2016. And it seems to me we should be waiting until 2016 to consider this, especially because our planning department is in the middle of creating an energy roadmap, which will go out to public hearings and get changed by what the public feedback indicates. And I think we should wait to be informed through that process before we even consider this. So I think it's premature to vote on this tonight. And I will be voting against it for that reason. And I urge other people to also.
Joe's got his hand up. Joe, you want to speak to that?
If I could. The reason we want to do this, and first of all, this is through MEGA. This is an entity that we have had a longstanding and, in fact, founding relationship with. So it's acquiring electricity through MEGA. We have an opportunity to reduce our electricity cost by 13% if we can lock in now for rates that are available to us now. And we can do that by extending the agreement beyond where it is today to extend it through September of 2018. So we have a tremendous opportunity to save significant dollars through this process. I want to remind that the legislature that when we buy energy now, when we buy electricity now, we also buy renewable energy certificates with that electricity, which allows us to contribute to the development of renewable energy sources in the country, in our case, wind energy. So a small part of what we do through our utility bill is to leverage the development of renewable power in this country, which is important. We would be considered fully green by the EPA and by others who look at the purchase of renewable energy certificates. But also say that with respect to the roadmap, my expectation is that based on what I've heard in this meeting and others, one of the recommendations will be for projects in the future to use more electricity and less fossil fuels. And in terms of our policies in purchasing electricity through this agreement, we certainly will encourage that. So, again, it's underlying economics. It's a 13% or $60,000 a year savings. It's contributing to the development of renewables through renewable energy certificates. And to do that, we need to extend the current agreement a little bit longer through 2018. So that's the reason that we've brought this resolution forward.
I have Martha next, then Carol, then Dooley in that order.
I strongly support this. I have a question on line 30. It says that if we do this, 100% of our consumption will be attributed to carbon-free energy production. Is this the first time we hit 100%?
No, the last two purchases. I'm not sure if we reference it every time in the resolution, but we have purchased 100% RECs for the last two purchasing cycles.
Okay. All right. I hope we can kind of put that in the press release, yeah, because I think it's we don't necessarily get the credit we should. And then on line 11, this is a really dumb question, but is that formally known as Integrys or formerly? Is this?
You're correct. Formerly.
Okay, so it's the country. The company is Constellation.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
I had Carol next.
So I have a question for Joe and then a statement. So Joe, does this contract that we would formulate with them require us to purchase a certain amount of electricity?
That's a really good point, Carol. That's a really good point. So a good example of our flexibility can be seen on most of the roofs of our buildings. So we were under a similar contract. It's the prior contract. When we installed the solar panels on our buildings to reduce our consumption of grid power and increase our reliance, and it's through a remote metering process. So we were able to we were able to rely on more solar power under the terms of that agreement. So no, there aren't minimum purchases that are required under this.
Okay. So I share Julie's concern. I'm not quite understanding the need to do with this now as opposed to at the same time of year. We did this in the fall of the year that our existing contract would be expiring. What, do you want to answer that one first?
Yeah, and because if we can buy long right now. We can lock in that rate right now. So we weren't able to wait until it expires on its terms. That's why we're bringing it forward
okay.
now.
So I understand that in order to lock in a rate that's a 13% savings, we're being encouraged to do this now. My sense, as somebody who follows this really closely, is that both Mega and, well, first let me say, New York State keeps opening markets, and through the REV process, is finally almost there in making its pronouncements about the ways in which it's going to open new markets or open markets to larger scale production in New York State of truly renewable energy sources. At that point, the savings will go up exponentially, or have the potential to go up exponentially for the purchase of energy in New York State. So a 13% savings at this point to me, it doesn't sound high enough. I think the potential, especially if we have the ability to wait, if we didn't have the ability to wait, it would make sense to do it now because that's the best deal on the table now. We don't lose anything, I don't think, by waiting, because there's no way that the savings, given the growth in the market of renewable energy sources, is going to be less than 13%. It's only has the potential to be more. Shall I go into a little more detail on that?
If I talk to myself, please ignore me, okay?
Okay. So on that, and in addition, MEGA in the past has been particularly responsive to Tompkins County when we've asked them to look into a change in their mix of energy and participation in renewable energy programs. They not only did so for Tompkins County, but they took what we provided to them and implemented it in their programs across the state for everybody. So we've worked really closely with MEGA, I agree. And I don't think that that relationship will go away. I think it only has the potential to grow and increase, and that over the next, how long would it be if we waited until that point, it would be, what year did you, what month did you say, Julie? It would be September of 2016. So we do this in September. Maybe if we went go a few months earlier, it would be maybe June, July, August of 2016. We have the potential to find, along with MEGA, that we can do even cheaper, get an even better rate. So I'm going to vote against this now, and I would urge other people to join in at least, or maybe even we should be tabling or postponing consideration of this resolution for 6 months to see where the energy market is going.
I have Dooley, Peter, Leslin, Jim. Dooley?
Thank you. Yes, Joe, I do remember that we were one of the founding members of MEGA, and we have worked with them over the years, as Carol said. Carol explained well what flux New York State's energy scene is in right now, and it's looking more hopeful. But with respect to the RECs being used to create new wind energy, the last time we did this, Joe, I pursued as far as I could with the information available from MEGA where the money was going that we were paying. And it led me not to a new wind farm, but to an existing wind farm that had already been paid. And it wasn't clear what our money was doing other than just increasing the profits of that developer. So I don't feel as good about RECs as you do. And that's not news to you, because I've felt this way a long time. But I really tried last time to find out how the money was being used. So I still will be voting against this. I think it's premature to vote for another year.
Peter Stein.
Yeah, this is all too complicated for me to understand. But when you're playing the stock market and it's going up, you say, no, don't sell now, it's going to go up. But all of a sudden you say that too often, then it goes down. And you don't have any idea which way it's going to go. You make a decision. So it sounds to me like just a pure, simple business transaction, not anything that shows our desire to have carbon-free energy produced or anything like that. It's a business thing. We're just talking about how much money we're going to have to pay per kilowatt for this. So that leads me to my question. How do you know that you won't get a better deal later? Or what is it that makes you decide that we ought to buy it now? Something that must in your mind be the fact that it's probably the best it's going to be, or it won't be good later. So could you respond to that, please?
I can, and maybe Jonathan can amplify it too. We rely on the experts who we can access through MEGA. So there's an energy consultant, Gordon Boyd, who has been extremely important to guiding our energy purchases and policies for some time. He's a consultant to MEGA. So we ran this by him. The opportunity was brought to us by Constellation. They brought it to us. We then talked to Gordon to make sure that this was something that he felt objectively is the right thing for the county to do. Is it the right time to buy? And is it a good price to buy at? And the answer back was, yes, we should lock in now.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a good argument to me.
Let's go to Leslin at Bean Claiborne.
I appreciate it, Mr. Chair. Peter asked the question I had, is what was the gut feeling that made you decide this to happen? And my follow-up question to that, and probably more for Dooley and Carol, is what's the harm in doing it now?
I didn't get
that. Is that rhetorical, or are you looking for a response?
I'm not necessarily looking for a response. I'm just, yeah, it's rhetorical. Let's leave it at
that.
We're
locked in.
Let's move to Jim Dennis.
When we get around to a vote, I just want a roll call vote so that, you know, it be public knowledge that there are people who want to charge taxpayers more money for energy when we have the opportunity to charge 13%.
We have a roll call vote. Carol Chalk.
So I had actually raised my hand to essentially answer Leslin's question before it was asked. I think that the harm in doing it now is the number of measures that New York State is involved in and that MEGA has become involved in as well to build and renewable energy and to allow us to do it on a community level. So there's money available for the kinds of programs that we've instituted, building solar panels on our own roofs. New York State has just passed something related to community net metering, where our own farmers will be able to build installations in their fields and we'll be able to purchase the power here and keep the money in the community at rates that are competitive. Micro hydro, MEGA has been involved in both the solar remote net metering and community micro hydro potential. So there are endless possibilities right now developing in the market. Plus, New York State is involved in looking at ways and going to pronounce in the next year how to open markets to new renewable energy, and it's only becoming more competitive. More and more companies are coming into New York State. Solar City, is it, just built a plant in Buffalo that, you know, that's employing thousands of people. So there's just so much potential right now that I don't see the price going up. I see it coming down. And so I would like to move to postpone this vote for, I would say, 7 months. I can make it even 6 months to give us a little more leeway. That brings us still to a huge window of difference between when we normally would renew our contract with MEGA and when it would come up. That would bring us, is August, September, October, November, December, February. I was going to say March. I'd like to postpone it till March, which still gives us plenty of time.
That and would so be 7 months. Yep.
7 months. So I'm going to move that.
I have a motion to postpone this resolution until the second meeting in March. Is there a second for that motion to postpone? Seconded by Dooley. Discussion on the motion to postpone. Will Burbank.
Question for Joe. What would be the implications of a postponement? And also, in terms of your recommendation to go with this time frame, do you have any sense of the magnitude of money involved by the savings?
Yep. First of all, if we delay, I don't know what – I mean, the rate is today's rate. So it would be a different rate months from now. How much does it mean? So we currently are spending $450,000 a year on electricity. Now, that's down. We have reduced our consumption. We've reduced our electricity costs significantly, but we spend $450,000. That would drop to $390,000 if we were to lock in at this rate. So, again, the savings is significant, $60,000 a year over the life of this agreement. Now, the other thing that you said, Will, kind of allows me to say something I wanted to, which is just like we did panels when we were under contract at that time, Excellus, if other opportunities arise during the period of this contract, we can take advantage of those. There's nothing that prevents us from looking at other opportunities, and we're looking actively at some things that MEGA is involved in right now. So it doesn't preclude any of those important new options that may open up during the period of this contract. So it's a win-win. You can buy low now and still keep your options open to look for alternatives in the future.
On the motion.
If I could just add, sure. Thank you, Joe. So I actually will be voting against this amendment, but I want to actually thank Carol and Dooley for attempting to bring some nuance to a very complicated discussion. And thank you also for bringing this to us. I certainly am, you know, if you look at purely in terms of saving money, it is clear this is something that will make our situation better. Dooley and Carol have been attempting to make us aware that things could be approached in another way. But I think I probably will be inclined to, at this point, to go with your recommendation.
On the motion to postpone, I have Peter Stein.
I'd like to move the question on both the amendment and the main motion.
We have, which I think is permissible to do, we would have to have a second for that call of both questions, seconded by Glenn Morey. On the motion to call both questions, so we will be voting first on the motion to postpone for 7 months. And we need to have a vote on calling the question on that first. All in favor of calling the question on the motion to postpone, please raise your hand. Those opposed? One, two, three, four opposed. We have now called the question on the motion to postpone. So we'll move to a vote on that. All in favor of postponing this for 7 months, please raise your hand. I have two. Those opposed. That's everybody else. So the motion to postpone fails. And now we move to the calling the question on the main motion.
Point of order?
Yes.
So Peter spoke earlier, and he's calling the question. I thought that wasn't permissible.
He can. It's only when it's your turn if you're speaking. The only thing you can do at your turn to speak is move to call the question.
Thank you.
If he'd done it, spoke, and then at the end said, I'm calling the question like we had another time, then we wouldn't proceed with that.
Thank you.
So I'm calling the question for the main motion. All those in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Those opposed. One, two, three, four, five, six. That fails. So we're back on the main motion, and I have Dan Klein and then Will Burbank on my list, and then Martha Robertson.
Thank you. I just wanted to say, for the benefit of anyone that's following this conversation but hasn't actually read the resolution, that this would only extend our contract for 2 years. It's not a long time. It's not a 20-year commitment. It's a 2-year commitment. So if something does happen with the energy roadmap that suggests we should look at a different way of doing this particular action, or if the New York State energy markets do start changing in some big way that would change the way we want to interact with the way we purchase electricity, we did not lock ourselves in for a long time. It's simply 2 years, and we guarantee we will save money in those 2 years. That's why I'm supporting it. Thanks.
Will?
I'll pass.
Martha?
Well, your little phone is magic, right? So I looked up Gordon Boyd and to see what his background was. So he's an energy procurement strategist and buyer's agent. He's since 1997, he's been managing group energy buying programs to save money for businesses and municipalities, serves most of New York State through chambers of commerce, et cetera. Specialty is procuring energy and renewables at the best price possible, advising customers on how to control their costs. I think I'm going to listen to Gordon Boyd.
Okay, anything else? Anyone else want to speak? Mike, then Carol?
Just a quick question, Joe. So basically what you were saying, and I kind of had to misunderstand this, because if we can change the contract at any time, what's the point of a contract?
It's the quantity. So we don't have to, there's not a minimum quantity that we have to buy. So if there is a, I mean, pick your renewable. If there are solar opportunities that arise where we could buy direct solar from something at, you know, the airport or whatever, if there are things like that, we still have that option to buy offline like that. So just again, it's analogous to the panels that we put on the roofs of the buildings while under contract. That meant that we were effectively buying less through our contract and getting more of our electricity through the solar.
Right.
That's the analogy.
But we're locking into buying a certain amount from that.
No, there's no minimum quantity. We're locking in at a rate.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
So we could always lower the amount we're buying and replace it.
Okay.
Yeah. Good.
Thanks. Carol? Ben Dooley?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate the appeal I sometimes make to my colleagues. If somebody who's already talked, like myself, is the only person left with my hand up, I understand calling the question. But when colleagues who haven't had a chance to talk on a motion have their hands up, I hope that we can afford the same courtesy to them that we have to ourselves and others who have already spoken. So I hate calling the question when there are still hands up, which there were in this case. Joe, the question I have for you is, what's the potential opportunity loss to doing this now? Is there any potential opportunity loss?
If I understand the question, I don't think so.
Well, the price could go. The savings could become even greater.
So, if the price of energy went down,
yeah,
that's a risk. That's a risk. That's why we consult with people who do this for a living, and we check what we're doing with the best available knowledge in terms of what the markets may do, and it's based on that recommendation that we wouldn't be here if we didn't get that kind of a recommendation. So, is there a risk? It could go lower, but our experts don't think, they think this is a really good rate.
Dooley, wrap us up, then please let's vote.
Joe just said something that raised a question in my mind. If you exercise the flexibility you see in the mega contract and stop buying through them and take advantage of another source, what happens to the RECs?
They would go down proportionate to our reduction of purchase of electricity through this contract.
So
for every kilowatt we buy, there's a REC attached to that. So that supports the development of a kilowatt some other place.
Okay. Ready to vote. Let's move to a roll call. We've been requested.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone wish to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
11 ayes, 2 noes.
The Mike? Resolution is agreed to.
Mike?
Yes.
I'd like the minutes to reflect that the reason for my vote was that I believe that the rates have the potential to go down even further and that we would not have lost anything by waiting a half a year on this measure.
All right, we can do that. Mike?
Well, actually, I kind of object to that because that's not why you voted against it. Yeah. You voted against it because you thought the energy should be green energy.
We allow our legislators to have comments.
No, but that's not reflecting what happened.
I made very clear that I thought that the rates had the potential to go lower.
I thought it was more because it was a green energy kind of thing.
All right, let's not go into that.
All right,
let's move down to budget and capital and take those two resolutions, then we'll go back to the top.
Oh, my goodness.
Resolution H, Jim, is ratification of the bargaining agreement.
Yes. Let me see. A ratification of the bargaining agreement between Tompkins County and the CSEA Association, CSEA Local 1000, AFSCME, Tompkins County Local 855, Tompkins County White Collar Unit, 8900-01. And I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha. Discussion. Mike Sigler.
Just wanted to say that I'm glad I didn't say to Joe something along the lines of eating my hat when this first came up. I am very impressed with your negotiating team. The fact that, you know, the union was able to come to this and you guys were able to come to some type of agreement on this, I think is a testament. I mean, it really is kind of amazing that you were able to get through this. So, and I'm glad you're still alive. It's really fantastic.
Me too.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Dan Klein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my wife is a member of the white-collar unit for the county. So to avoid the appearance of a conflict of interest, I'm asking to be able to abstain from this vote.
You may abstain.
Thank you.
Martha Robertson.
So this only took three different personnel commissioners,
yes,
right?
guess
that only took one county administrator.
Dennis, then Dooley Keefe.
Martha stole my joke. But it really has gone through three. We're now to Amy, and, you know, it was well established all during the process. My sense is, I mean, obviously Joe did a great job in people and personnel. The negotiating committee on the CSEA side, while difficult at some times, recognized what the county was trying to achieve. And they saw that, they discussed it, and they supported the contract. They got a little of what they wanted, and we clearly got a little of what we wanted. So it was a long but a very typical negotiating issue or picture, at least the ones I've been involved in. So I thank them for approving it, and I would hope that we will also.
Julie Kiefer?
I have a stupid question. Since our negotiators have negotiated this on our behalf, are we bound to vote for it?
No, only the people on the negotiating right. team, Dooley, I think you remember that.
I have one question on the first page of the resolution. It's line 27. It says Article 4, change 30 days to 90 days, but it doesn't say what it's about. What is that about?
It's about the period of temporary employment. So currently temporary employment is defined as 30 days. This would change it to 90 days.
Are there many people in that category?
No. It's when you usually when you bring somebody in to fill a gap in a roster, somebody's ill or something like that.
Okay, thank you.
Martha?
So that's not the probationary period when somebody's first hired?
No.
Oh, okay. So the others on the team, it was Jim and Peter on this one as well, as legislative reps. Thank you very, very much. It's a ton of work, and we really appreciate your being there for us.
Vote, short form roll call, please.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And let's go to resolution I.
Yes, Mike. It is establishing salaries for positions designated as management and authorizing the transfer of funds for salary adjustments, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslin. Discussion?
Joe, do you want to...
Yeah, I could
talk a little bit about that.
I could, and before I begin, let me also thank the negotiating team. It was a good team, and Amy is here tonight with us in case anything hard came up, she could answer those questions. But like Jim, I also want to recognize the people that sat across the table from us who showed a lot of courage and good faith to get through a lot of difficult issues to get us to this point, and I really appreciate what the union representatives did on the CSEA contract to get us to the finish line. The resolution that's before you now is for the management group, and as I've said too often, our confidential employees is a group of unrepresented employees, just 23 of them. By policy, they get whatever you grant the white-collar union, by policy. For managers, it's by custom and practice that we've given the same arrangement to them that we have to our CSEA white-collar unit. And that's what we're asking you to do tonight, which is to essentially piggyback on the white-collar agreement, to follow custom, to provide the managers the same kind of adjustments in salaries and benefits and things like the joining the Platinum Plan that were a part of the CSEA white-collar agreement. So that's the basis of the resolution.
Okay, ready to vote? Again, a short form roll call, please.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Are there any noes? That's unanimous.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's go back to reports. We'll go to the county administrator, Joe Mariana.
I have no report tonight.
All right.
What?
I can make one up if you like. Pull the screens down. We'll do a PowerPoint if you like.
Then let's go to report by the county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
Sure. I just wanted to say one thing. The trial that I told you or warned you all about at the last meeting was postponed for a year as a result of the illness of a witness for the plaintiff. So that did not happen and will happen sometime next year. No further report than that.
Questions? Our finance director is asked to be excused. Is there any report, Joe, from his office?
No, there's not.
Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? I think we've gone through all the resolutions, so there couldn't be any to withdraw, but there might be some to add. I guess not. Reports from standing committees. Martha Robertson chairs our Economic Development Committee.
Thank you. We have not had a committee meeting since the last legislature meeting. I just want to briefly mention that I spent the first part of today at a WSKG forum called Early Learning and the Bottom Line about the economic impacts and benefits of early childhood education, child care programs from 0 to age 5, and got a lot of good information and made some contacts. We'll be bringing some people to the Economic Development Committee to hear more about the topic. And WSKG will run a radio and television show based on what happened today. I think September 24th is the date. The next Economic Development Committee meeting will be September 14th, Monday the 14th, at 4:30, a shorter meeting than usual. It'll be in the old jail. That change in date is because of Labor Day. That's my report.
Questions for Martha.
Wait.
Carol.
I'm sorry, what time did you say?
4:30. Facilities is at 3:30, right?
So that's what I was going to ask about, whether that conflicted.
Yeah, we had to look around for times and try to avoid the budget presentations, so we, working with Michelle, just kind of decided to go for an hour starting at 4:30.
Okay. Let's move on to the Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. We are meeting 1 week from today, Tuesday, August 25th at 3:30. We have two very interesting topics on the agenda. One concerns drones. I just want to be clear, there is no legislation on this at this point. It's just presentation and discussion. And we are going to have Mr. Lawrence Brinker, who is the executive director of the Northeast U.S. Airspace Integration Research Alliance out of Syracuse, who will be here. He'll give a short presentation, and he will answer questions that anybody from the legislature or the public may have. So that's at 3:30. And then later in the same meeting, we're going to have a presentation from our Information Technology Department about the Office 365 system, and there will be a resolution on that day. And that's my report.
Questions for Dan. Peter Stein.
Yeah, that presentation, the expert that's talking,
Could you repeat again who he works for and what he does?
Okay, so his name is Lawrence Brinker, Executive Director of the Northeast U.S. Airspace Integration Research Alliance. And what this is the federal government set up five or six locations around the country to study the interaction between drones and the rest of airspace. And this, we have
he
one.
He studied the issue.
And field testing and such.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Sounds interesting.
Carol? So I know this has been a controversial topic, and we've gotten letters. I think we've already gotten letters from various perspectives on drones, and I'm just wondering if there's anything to be done about making sure that those various groups who've expressed interest from one perspective or another are fully informed about this topic being on the agenda. I mean, I know our agendas are out there and anybody can go look, but most people involved in things don't necessarily think to go looking at where, which committee this ended up in or how. So I just wonder if there's some how to do that.
Sure. I only recall getting one email about this, and I can make sure that that person who represents an organization knows about it. Thanks.
Okay. Anything else for Dan? Dan, thank you. Let's go to our Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
The PEAK committee is meeting tomorrow at 3 p.m. We'll be, I hope, approving projects for this year's stream corridor protection and flood mitigation project program that we have every year. And our colleague, Mr. Stein, will be talking to the committee specifically about TCAT and its future. Those are the two biggest items on the agenda. That's it.
Questions for Dooley? Thank you, Dooley. Charter review, we met and we talked about some of the small departments. We went through their sections in the charter. We're pretty much through the language, existing language in the charter, and reviewing a lot of that. We'll be revisiting some of the language we've been talking about as we went along, and we hope to have some discussions about some theoretical changes that could possibly happen with the charter as to whether or not they might be a good idea. For example, how can we improve voter participation, or how should officials who are elected continue to be elected in certain situations or not? Things that have been talked about in prior charter review committees. But it's I think we'll see some discussion at least on those issues, so that we know we have not left any stones unturned as we have gone through this pretty lengthy process of taking a more than 10-year look now at the charter. Anything I can answer? Okay. Martha.
Yeah, when do you think, are we going to get the whole thing in a batch to then review and vote on, or how does that work?
Eventually we will have a proposed change to the charter, which will probably redo the charter, a revision to the whole thing, and that will come to this as a local law. If there are any changes to such things as elected official positions, that would have to go to referendum of the voters. Otherwise, it could be adopted in whole or amended by this legislature, and it would become the latest revision of our whole charter.
When do you expect you'll have it?
I hope by the end of the year.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Carol?
So on that, do you anticipate that the changes are large enough, are small enough that it can be given to us in a redlined version that where we'd be able to see easily what changes, or are there sections or the whole thing where the changes are large enough that that won't be possible to do?
I think you're going to have to get the whole charter with all the redlining and changes, and you're going to have enough time to spend on it and look at those things. Because there are lots of departments. There's, what, 30-some chapters in the charter, and we've been through almost all of them. Am I speaking okay for the rest of the members of the committee? Thanks.
Well, some parts of the charter have had really very substantial changes made. I frankly can only think of one, but for that one, I think it would be hard to. I mean, you could have the red line thing, but it would really be hard to negotiate through it.
Okay, let's go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. We are not having a meeting on the 24th for a variety of reasons. I'm out of town. Other people have things to do, and we will have a meeting prior to the September 1 meeting on a couple of issues that we have to deal with. Also, the September 1 meeting, the county administration presents the budget. I would hope that you would all take a look at your 2016 calendar for September and October for the EBC meetings. We have 8, 10, 17, 24, 28, 30 in the dates in September, or lotto numbers, whatever you'd like to use. So, put those on the calendar. As I've said before many times, that if you can be here, that's wonderful. You will not be penalized by me for not being here. And, you do what you have to do and do what you need to do to come to all the meetings. Obviously, we'd like everyone there, but, you do what you need to do. So other than that, thank you, Joe, for all the work on the contract and Peter. And I really appreciate that we are now at a point where we only have one contract left, and that is significant, I think. So, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Any questions for Jim? Old Library Committee, there's no report. We haven't met. Public Safety Committee. Nathan Shinagawa is the chair.
Yes, the Public Safety Committee met yesterday, and we had a long discussion about jail statistics, and then we also, and we're going to get a larger, associated with those jail statistics, we also had the discussion about the contingent fund request for personnel and board out costs, which are quite substantial, related to everything from overtime from the correction officers to overtime by the road patrol itself, and then also board out costs. And so there was quite the discussion. The undersheriff and Captain Bunce were there, but the sheriff was not able to attend. And so the committee felt that it would be best to postpone the discussion to when the sheriff is here, and also so that we can get information from county administration about what the historic costs for those overtime, for the overtime personnel and board out costs is. Because what was said is that we have a tendency to perhaps under budget what the actual costs will be. And so we end up being in a similar place more often than not. And so we wanted to look at his actual numbers rather than budgeted numbers to get a clearer picture of the costs as well. So in addition to that, we had a discussion about probation and community justice and had the probation department do an update. And I guess the most interesting, well, first, they're going to be the day reporting program is going to be completed. Their new space will be completed soon, so that's very exciting. The other update is that the probation department is doing taking a different approach to educating, town justices and whatnot and other judges about the word alternatives to incarceration, because the word alternatives to incarceration assumes that incarceration is the default. And so to shift the paradigm, right? It's they're using the word now enhanced. What was it? It's
SO.
Yeah, I know. Remember, it's SO, but I can't remember what it stands.
Supervision is in there, I think.
Supervision. Well, gosh. All right. Well, it's a new term. And the idea, and the idea, though, is that we start out not by assuming that someone's going to be going to jail. And instead, we start the discussion about, you know, what's the best sentence that we can give them that will get the results that we want, you know, in terms of them having a low recidivism rate and all that. So that was a good discussion. We did talk about Second Dam for a little bit. We had a community member who was concerned about that, and we also heard about that the sheriff's office is going to work on some additional enforcement in that area. And then finally, we talked about Ban the Box, and we talked about Carrie's Ithaca Times article, though we on our agenda said it was a New York Times article, about the box that says, you know, that asks the question of whether or not you've committed a felony. And we too have that box at the county level. We don't have to have that box, nor does any business really. I mean, we can ask the question if it's later on in the interview process, if it's pertinent, it's going to affect the job, and if we have concerns about them. So obviously, you know, you wouldn't want a finance person that's committed a financial felony to be applying. But you can ask that question not in the beginning of the process, but you can ask it afterwards. So you can at least allow people to apply. Because a lot of people get discouraged when they see that box that they just don't apply, period. So we're going to continue that discussion forward, and Jim Dennis is going to be the champion for that issue. And so he's going to be working with some Ban the Box experts. And we wanted to start taking the approach of saying, okay, well, if we did this at the county level, what would that mean? And so the plus side of doing it, right, is that you would get more candidates for positions. And there may be felonies that people committed that have nothing to do with the type of work that they end up doing. So you'll have more applicants. Now, the tricky part that the county administrator is talking about is that at some point we will have to figure out whether or not they have committed that felony that does pertain to the kind of work that they do. And so asking that question can lead to some, you know, challenging discussions moving forward. So these are the type of things that we have to weigh, but the idea is that we want to see if we can get rid of the box, at least at the county level, and then set that example, and then go from there. That was pretty much the meeting. Am I missing anything? Oh, we had an update about technical assistance. So the technical assistance write-up that that a number of us worked on, and Paula was the main shepherd of, the response from the Justice Department was that the scope was a little, I think you used the word, what, too large? It was a large scope than what they're used to. So leave it to us in Tompkins County to give very, very broad, large scopes. We want to look at everything, right? And so Paula has a call with them Wednesday, so I guess that's tomorrow, to talk about that scope. And it very well may be the case that scope gets a little narrowed, but she's going to do her best to make sure that it incorporates the things that we as legislators ask to be part of that technical review. So that process is still moving forward. I don't have anything else.
Questions for Nathan. Peter Stein.
Yeah.
In recent times, I've become aware of several articles in newspapers about something that absolutely shocked me. About the unbelievable use of just pure fists on people in jail to a degree that I would have thought is impossible any place in a jail or in a prison in the United States. Horrible. I mean, could this be right, what I'm reading? But apparently it is. And I wonder whether we ought to be aware that is a possibility for things to have, for that kind of abuse is a possibility to take place in any jail, and how in the world do you know whether or not it's taking place? I think you might just think about that for a minute. I mean, whether there might be some kind of a way of reporting it that would not put an inmate in danger or reduces his or her benefits or something like that. But there's enough discussion of it that it seems to me we might just think about whether there's anything we can do to prevent that if in fact it's it happens in our jail. And,
I think it's an interesting question. Now, I think in prisons, people are there for much longer. You know, our average length of stay at the jail is like 30 days or something, right? Or,
I think it's even less.
It's even less than that, yeah. So, I mean, I think you would probably, since the churn of people coming through and then coming back into the community, you'd probably hear more. But still, it would be nice if there was some sort of anonymous way that people can report their concerns, right? Talk about that.
Okay. Anything else for Nathan? Nate, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's go to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslyn McBean-Claiborne is our chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet next Wednesday, the 26th. But in the meantime, I wanted to alert you all that you should have received already in your electronically the announcement for our upcoming workforce reading and discussion program. I find it rather interesting that the theme for this fall discussion program is generational diversity in the workplace, especially since coming off of our climate survey, that was one of the bigger issues that we saw surfacing from our climate survey, the generational issues within our workforce causing a lot of, divide in terms of communication, in terms of use of technology and non-use of technology. Those are some of the things that people talked about. So this is a very timely topic, a timely theme for us to be talking about. The meeting days, if you recall, there are usually four times that the group gets together, whoever will participate. They begin September 16th, 23rd, 30th, and go through October 7th. It's a wonderfully facilitated dialogue. So I want to encourage any of you who might have some time to please participate and to also continue to share the word with the workforce, because we would love for people to participate. This is our second, we're doing this on the second year funding, capacity building funding that we received from the Community Foundation, thanks to Paula putting in that grant. So we're looking forward to people really actively participating in this. Like I said, goes hand in hand with the work and the message and the information that came to us from the climate survey. So we're moving along with our plans and putting some of those things into action. Please pass the word on. Revisit your mailboxes, your email boxes, and do sign up. It is an absolute wonderful program and way of learning and engaging in dialogue to help us redefine our cultural competency and diversity conversation, inclusion conversation within the county, without anyone feeling put on the spot, so to speak, but having an opportunity to really engage and build the kind of organization we want to build. So one idea, one example, one program. Please do, as it says, get involved, be proactive, and stay engaged. That's my report.
Thank you, Leslyn. Questions? Okay, we'll move along to the Health and Human Services Committee. Peter Stein is the chair.
Okay. Last time I gave a report like this, I ended in the usual way by saying the next meeting will be on the first Thursday of the month at 4 o'clock. Nobody stopped me. And at the last meeting, I came at 4 o'clock, but it turns out I was late. So the report that I gave of when the meeting takes place was an error. But our next meeting is going to be the first Thursday in the month at 3:30, which is now our new time. So I was a little bit late, but I did hear most of what went on at the meeting, and I'll tell you just a few of the highlights. The past meeting, that is. We had a report from, you all know about FoodNet. FoodNet is one of the more important activities we have to make life for the elderly better. And FoodNet goes around and gives food to people, mostly people who are on low income, but also has the other effect of having some elderly people who sit in a house all day and never talk to anybody meet someone to talk to on a day with, when they come and bring a meal. Meals on Wheels, sometimes called. So we had a report that I thought made an unusual benefit from being in an institution as large and broad as Cornell University, is that the Food Net asked a group of students, presumably in the business school, to look at their operations and compare them to the best way of operating in nonprofit organizations. And they went and looked very carefully at what FoodNet does and how it spends its money, and then made some recommendations to them on how they could do more for less, which seemed like a very nice opportunity to have a cooperation between ourselves and between ourselves and Cornell. There was some discussion in the meeting. Some of us thought that asking people from a business school how to make better a nonprofit operation didn't make a whole lot of sense, but it's not the same thing as a business, but there are many things that are common, it seems to me, between businesses and non-businesses and ways to make things more efficient. But that's what they're looking for, is a way to make things more efficient. Then we had a report from Patricia Carey about subsidies for child care. Another program I didn't really realize took place, but this is a way to enable people in lower incomes to work. Sometimes you just can't work if you've got babies at home and you don't have the money to pay for child care. And we spent a significant amount of money on this. I think it was something like $2 million a year to carry out this program. And that, to me, sounded like a great idea and money that was well spent. Then there was a couple of routine discussions. And then the last item is certainly not routine, and it's so not routine that I don't consider myself capable of giving you a report on it. And so I will turn to the county administrator and ask him if he could give us some report on the way that we are considering or the way that we're intending to change the highest level operation at the health department and the mental health department.
Thanks, Peter. And let me be a little more equivocal on that than intent. Right? But at the committee, we described where we stand right now in exploring the concept of having a single person head up two departments, Department of Health and the Department of Mental Health. And we wanted to bring the committee up to speed on where that exploration stands right now. I think everybody knows that currently that system, which was put in place as a temporary measure to allow us to conduct a search for a mental health commissioner, has become a longer-term thing. And as we look at the performance of how it's working, we think it's working pretty well. And so we've talked before about how we are giving consideration to making that a longer-term solution to the leadership of both those departments, essentially a CEO-type position that would oversee both health and mental health. We talked to the committee about some organizational changes that would be a part of it if we're to go forward, including parity among the deputy commissioners in both the departments, giving them both similar responsibilities and labor grades, pay grades, support staff needs that may go along with that kind of change. So we talked about a few of those organizational changes that would have to happen. We also talked about process, and we talked about conversations that have been had to make sure that if we're going to go forward on this, we do it with a lot of insights of people who have an interest in success, including the Mental Health Board. We've had a couple of meetings there. Candidly, the second of the two was pretty what do we say, candid, direct. It was good questions about how this change would benefit the mental health department and the people that it serves. Good questions that help us think through how do we organize this to make sure that we can address those concerns. There have been conversations with the Board of Health. There have also been important conversations with the employees of both departments, not in person, not in meetings like this, but through a completely open-ended survey. And we call it a survey only because we did it through SurveyMonkey in order to allow the anonymity of response. People sent emails. If people did other things to provide input, their identities would be known. We felt that we would get more candid responses if we allowed the anonymity of an open-ended, essentially essay to us to let us know about concerns, suggestions, ideas, how they feel about this. So we've been able to gather the input of employees as we consider this. I think with respect to timeline, we also talked about we need to be deliberative, but it can't go on forever. The current situation is probably not sustainable. There's not a deputy in mental health at this point. We need to move forward with the deputy, but don't know how to spec it and what to look for until we're sure about how the leadership is going to be structured there. So we need to move forward, plus just to give clarity to the people that work in both of those departments. So at this point, we are looking at, let's call it a 60-day process, where I think what we owe the legislature and the boards and the employees is a clear description of what this would mean, what the benefits would be for both departments, how we would address some of those very valid concerns that have been raised about things like access to the combined commissioner, communication channels, those kinds of things, and focus for both departments. I think we owe a response to how that would be addressed through the plan. So the notion would be over the next month to develop that plan, to be able to present it to Health and Human Services, to get feedback from Health and Human Services, and then based on that, decide whether to go forward. And if we go forward, then come back the next month with legislation that would be required to put this in place. A part and parcel of this, I always try to be careful to say, it's not a full-scale consolidation, so we're not talking about bringing these two departments together from top to bottom. We're talking only about combined leadership. And also, we've said explicitly we need to have the courage to recognize that if it doesn't work the way we hope, that we can go back to where it was before, so that we want to build in an evaluation structure where after the first year there's a look-see to make sure that it's working generally as we had hoped. There aren't any tremendous problems that have emerged that we didn't anticipate. And then within 3 years, take a much more detailed, structured, formal evaluation of how the system is working, and again at that point make a call about whether this is something that we want to continue doing in the long term or whether we want to make a change. And as a part of that, we would want to make sure that the evaluation test is in hand and up front early before we get a sense of ownership in what's been done that might bias the way we look at the evaluation later on. So that would be a part of what we would want to put in place up front. How are we going to look at this to see if it's working? So that was the report to the committee. It's still conceptual. It's still exploratory. We are underway with a serious look at it, though, and we'll be bringing back to you the recommendations and reports that we have over the next couple of months. That's what we had reported on at committee.
Any questions?
Martha?
Actually, it's about the child care issue. You, Patricia Carey came to Economic Development back in June and talked about this program, and I happen to know the number because I asked her about it related to this workshop I went today. The $2 million is state allocation. It's not local property taxes.
It's all state money.
Okay. Well, I think we do put about $300,000, $310,000 in addition, but I don't know if that's a drawdown, like we have to put something in to get theirs or whatever, but it's vast majority is state money.
Thank you, Martha. Yeah, I was at that meeting, and I found it so interesting, I was inspired to bring that back to the AJS.
Thanks, Peter.
And, okay, so that's it, and our next meeting is next Thursday at 3:30.
You're sure it's
the
at 3:30?
The first
3:30.
Thursday of the month, sorry, at 3:30.
Thanks. Last but not least, we have Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is our chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. F and I met on August 10th, a week ago Monday. We had a short discussion on the capital plan as presented by Joe Moraine. Talked about various projects like replacing analog video cameras at the jail and replacing the control system that does all the door locks and so on and so forth. Also, the George Road Bridge. I believe it was a replacement, right, Joe? Not a repair. And also the fact that we were going to continue to fill facilities restoration projects on through 2019 and take a break on 2019 and 2020 instead of this year and next. So that would allow us to speed up some really necessary repairs that these buildings the county has needs. We passed the resolutions that were passed this evening on the tipping shelter, and electricity. Okay. Also, we had a discussion with the highway department, both an update on the damage from the June 25th storm and also the damage to the county vehicle, which was basically destroyed during that process due to an accident. It has a total replacement cost of $209,650, of which we're going to end up paying $141,150. The truck itself has a current value of $78,500 and a buyback of $10,000. So we would be putting the $68,500 with the $141,000 to purchase the new vehicle, replacement vehicle. And in addition to that, we had an update from Harrell Lamaro. And the jail foundations and for the outdoor portion are being done now, and September, I guess, the phase two inside project begins and should be done by the middle of November. Courthouse concrete restorations late September, and the mental health is under design phase right now. And human services building phase two is about 1 week from completion, and that's 2 months ahead of schedule. And that's my report.
Thank you, Dave. Questions? Martha.
I can't remember the date. Was it September 24th? They expect to have like an opening or ribbon cutting at their reporting? It was mentioned.
No. I have an EBC meeting on the 24th.
Okay, so they didn't announce that yet. I thought they mentioned it. Pat mentioned it at public safety. They usually,
I think you're right.
All right. We'll find out.
I think that's right, and it would be an afternoon. It wouldn't conflict with a meeting. And they're going to be moving in. I think furniture is in mid-month, so we'll be in operation.
Thanks.
Very good. Anything else on facilities? Let's go to minutes of August 4th. Someone want to move those? Jim Dennis, seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion about the minutes. Dooley.
Yes, I'll call your attention to packet page 34, which is page one of the minutes. The last entry on that page summarizes one of the public speakers, Tom Hanna, but it omits his statement of which project he supported, and I think that that needs to be supplied. He spoke in favor of the Franklin properties before he spoke about, as a young man, meeting Mac Travis and talking about all the good things Mac Travis had done. And on the second page, that sentence goes on to say and suggested the old library project could be another accomplishment, making it sound like he supported the Travis project, but he doesn't. So the way it's worded gave the wrong impression.
Well, those are, you're asking to change comments of other people.
I will ask that our staff check their records to make sure that that Tom Hanna's support of Franklin Properties, which is what he said, they put it in somewhere to make it clear.
Glad to have staff check their records. If there are corrections that can be added to the notes, we have a process to do that.
I can do the notes. I can't do the minutes.
Okay, I understand. Carol Chalk.
Well, I think that's a significant enough question that it's not really appropriate to vote on the minutes the way they stand now. So I would suggest that we table these until we have the staff has a chance to look at it.
Is that a motion to table the minutes?
Well, unless somebody's withdrawing them yet, then that is.
Is there a second on the motion to table the minutes? Seconded by Dooley. Discussion on the motion. I don't know whether you can discuss the motion to table.
No, you can table.
All right, we go right to a vote. All those in favor of tabling the minutes.
Wait, point of order. Should I have appropriately asked to postpone rather than table? Is that what I'm doing? I'm not saying table and disappear. I'm just suggesting that they get brought back.
You could do either. If you table them, if they would have to be brought up off the table at a future meeting.
Okay, no, I didn't like, can I change that then? I don't think that was what I meant. I meant to postpone the minutes till our next meeting. When
any objection to that change? Does it seconder agree with that?
Sure.
So now it's a motion to postpone to the next meeting the minutes of the 4th. All those in favor of the postponement?
Not debatable then?
I'm sorry?
Is it debatable?
Yes.
You can comment on
a postponement?
We use the term postponement. In our rules, it's delay on the table indefinitely versus delay on the table to a certain time. And you can discuss motions delay on the table to a certain time, but not delay on the table indefinitely.
If we must, will then Jim?
We must. And I can see from people's reactions, why on earth are we debating the minutes yet again? However, this was a member of our public who came, who actually came, I think, on at least two, if not three occasions, was very, very clear in his position. Those were not accurately reflected in these particular minutes. I think it's a small matter. I know our staff works tirelessly to get it as correct as possible. Unfortunately, our process, as it has evolved, makes it very hard to do this. So I think it's entirely reasonable to postpone it, ask them to go back and relook at the, just listen to the record or the video and see if they agree with Carol's memory on that topic.
Jim Dennis.
And Dooley, thank you.
I think it's shameful that we would cut down another tree to reprint these minutes one more time. I am telling you, I heard people at that microphone one day supporting the project. What's the name of the project? I've forgotten it.
Franklin.
Franklin. Yeah, and they would stand up and say, "I'm not for that TNH project. I don't want those condos." There were people who did not know where the condos were. I mean, that's outrageous that we would postpone it.
Uh, guess we're not ready to vote. Carol?
I will personally apologize to Tom Anna, Carol, because I know him better than anyone in the room.
Carol Chuck.
So I personally heard from Tom Hanna, and I agree with Dooley's assessment of what it is he was saying to us. It, rather than postpone it, I'd be happy to amend my motion to just change the comments.
Motion to postpone on the table at this
point. Well, I understand.
You can speak to that.
It could be amended.
You can withdraw
to just, it could be amended to just change the comments rather than have to print more paper, if that's Jim's objection. I would have no problem with somebody amending my motion with suggested wording to change this to reflect
Tom Hanna's
stance.
I would have a problem with that. I don't think it's a relevant amendment to a motion to postpone to then change the original. If you want to vote on the motion postpone or withdraw it and then move an amendment, you can do that.
Well, I would consider it friendly if somebody came up with wording that everybody seemed to agree on that accurate. I just don't think it's right to portray the comments of a member of the public in a way that they didn't intend. And it's hard enough for us to make sure that the public understands that we do listen and care about what they come here and say.
Let's vote on the...
Whatever mechanism we use,
I'd like to vote on the motion to postpone the minutes to the next meeting. All those in favor of postponing to the next meeting, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's not enough to pass that, so that fails. Now we're back to the minutes themselves. That's the motion to adopt the minutes. Anything further? Dooley?
I will be voting against the minutes. I vote against them for many reasons. I would like our minutes to reflect this time. I'm voting against them because they give the misimpression for Mr. Hanna's position on the old library project.
All right. All those in favor of the minutes of August 4th, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's 11. Is that right?
No.
Who's not voting?
Martha's not here.
No, I did.
Martha's out. Okay. Well, they're not agreed to. We'll take them up again in the future. Let's have
there
a motion.
Goes another tree.
Let's have a motion to adjourn. Peter?
Are we going to executive session?
I know.
Joe, you have an executive session.
We need a motion to adjourn into executive session. Go into executive session, I should say. We will not come out.
We will
not come out and take action, but we will adjourn at the end. We aren't expecting any action. Mike, is there something you want to say? All right, you've moved to executive session, seconded by Dooley. All those in favor of the executive session, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Okay, we'll stop for a 10-minute break, and then we'll proceed with the executive session.